Hello and welcome to This Way Up. I'm Babette Gallard.
And I'm Terry Shekhanovsky. You'll hear today in this episode from a truly remarkable woman doing extraordinary work. One does run out of adjectives when talking about the work that Carol D'Anti does. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. But Babette and I just wanted to give you a sense of her history before we do that. Carol was a student actually at Morris Isaacson High School. On the 16th of June, 1976, she marched with the student and faced the police bullets. She went into exile in the wake of that. You'll hear she lost a family member. And the story of her time in exile is also a very moving and extraordinary tale, but we won't have time to go into that today. But Carol came back to South Africa, did various things, which she'll touch on briefly. And we're talking to her today because she has set up an early learning center in Izumbuzini, which is on the outskirts of Orlando. Babette, will you just explain a little bit more about what she's done?
Yes, so it's really on the edges of Soweto, and it's an informal settlement that you will probably drive by without even realizing what's there. But within that, there was a rubbish dump, nothing more than that. And she and her volunteers and the community members themselves have cleared that to establish this early learning center. And it's extraordinary because it's functioning. It takes in children every day, whereas normally they'd have nowhere to go.
Yes. I mean, she describes how she, you know, how and why she came to start this center in the face of such need. And I think, Babette, one of the things that strikes me most is that the community that Carol is working with are living in truly pre-industrial conditions. Literally, they are chopping wood for energy. They are carrying water in buckets. There is absolutely no infrastructure, no support, no resources whatsoever. No way even for a young woman to bury a baby that she has lost. And Carol has stepped into that need. And I think one of the things that makes that even more powerful and moving and impressive is that Carol has done so against the wave of xenophobia that is sweeping South Africa. She has insisted on seeing the humanity of those migrants, whether they're from within South Africa or outside of it, and on taking steps to alleviate their suffering.
And that can, in many senses, sound like a very hopeless story. But the center that she's set up is actually a beacon of hope. It's a real privilege to bring Carol here to tell you her story.
The organization called Uzima, which is a Swahili name for life, is established in Soweto in an informal settlement called Izumbuzini, which is based just next to Orlando Stadium. It is an informal settlement that has a mixture of people. You know, it has South Africans, it has Mozambicans, it has people from Malawi, and people from all the nine provinces that our country has right now. So we are there to make sure that girls are empowered, that they can make the right choices, and that they are well looked after psychosocially, and they are given the right nutrition, as some of them are actually infected by HIV, and that we don't go through what you went through years ago when we believed that African potato or beetroot were the answer to curing the HIV.
And what ages are the girls that you're helping?
So we'd have girls, you know, from the ages of 5 who come into the center. But we also have the smaller ones who come in, but where more concentration is actually taken for girls from the ages of 8 up to 18.
And Carol, you started it because you just saw the kids roaming around with nowhere to go. It was quite an organic initiative, wasn't it?
This is the second time that I'm working in that informal settlement. So I founded an organization 23 years ago called Ikageng. One day I was actually called by the counselor to say there is a 16-year-old girl who has recently lost her 5-day-old baby. She could not bury her because she actually was staying alone. So got, you know, like the funeral parlor who assisted. And then a week down the line, he calls me again to say there is a 24-year-old woman who actually has been killed by the boyfriend. Then I began to realize that things have changed. there are so many people who are staying here and there's hardly anything. There is no center, you know, there is no space for young girls. And there were dumping sites everywhere. Then it dawned on me that I should actually be able to do something there. And the counselor just asked me, you know, would you like to give this a try? But I was not aware that the try was that much. And sometimes it is stories of hope. Sometimes it is stories of despair that we had to go through every day.
So, Cara, how did you start working in the settlement? Did you have to talk to particular people to be able to go in there?
Yeah, it is quite complicated, you know, when you start working in such settlements. So I thought I would just go in and do a little study and find out, you know, how many people are staying there. Until one day I was told, hey, wait, you know, there are gatekeepers here. The Indunas are here. But again, I was confronted with an Induna for each and every language. There are about 11 Indunas in that area. And there were so many bottlenecks. I had to understand that I may be coming in to the disadvantage of the community, just doing things to get money, grab money for myself, not taking the needs of that community at heart. I think what made it easy is the fact that some of the Indunas know me from my previous work. And I think the story of the 16-year-old girl who lost her child and the 24-year-old girl who actually lost her life to abuse spoke volumes that, you know, we can trust her with the lives of children and women here.
So we've been to the site and it's incredibly impressive. It's completely cleared. And I know there's a story behind that. So can you tell us how that came about?
I think it was during the World Cleanup Day. And I thought maybe people will not be open to cleaning up their spaces, but realized that people actually want to stay in a clean space. We started working from Monday. We were quite excited, you know, because the other thing is the city council and Pick It Up don't give us plastics because they say we turn them into wardrobes, you know. But then on that day, it was like we just outdid ourselves. For the whole week, we were just picking up there and there. But the other thing was people then started questioning things around because we are just next to the Klapspruit Valley River. So people thought, no, you know, we would rather put rubbish into the river. But again, you know, like after the talks that we had, you know, people began to realize that it is just as dangerous, you know, when you put your plastic bags and kimbis into the river. So that gave us an understanding of saying we need clean space for the health of our children, for nature as well. It was such an amazing exercise. And we are doing it twice in a month where we just go outside and clean up. But one day, Josie came in. You know, they wanted to look at spaces that have been cleaned up and that can serve a greater purpose. So when they came in, they just loved what we had done. And this guy from Standard Bank said, I've been here before, but this is totally, totally, totally amazing. We then started doing a study, you know, with the community to say, what is it that you need here? So people need a place where they can worship. People need a space where they can actually have their funerals because we don't have any space. The children as well would need to go into ECD centers. So, you know, like people came up with ideas. So we had a concept note, you know, on what has to happen. People can't even go to clinics because when you go to the clinic and they say your house number, you say Z something, you totally get discriminated against because you actually are either a foreigner or somebody who does not own a house. So Josie My Josie got excited about it. So they started bringing in engineers, you know, people who said, yeah, we can containerize the space and make sure that we have a center where children can come in and do their homeworks. We can have a library. We can have a little clinic, you know, like maybe a pop-up clinic where people can come in
isn't one of the issues water?
We carry buckets. You know, we go to the taps to carry water into the space that we are in right now. So whenever I get into Ezimbuzini, when I get into that community, all of a sudden I would need to change as well. To enter into a toilet that is not flushing, to enter into a toilet that gets cleaned up twice a week. I would also have to be one of the women who go into the tap. And when we are at the tap, we start relating our stories, you know. And I just loved it because you actually come to the level of the women that you are serving when one of them says, you know, I'm a rape survivor. I can literally say, I know how it's like to be raped as an older woman. I know. So we just become friends. Not only that you come as a leader, so that they can come back to you and say, do you know what you were talking about yesterday at the tap? I just wanted to say thank you. Or maybe I see one of them coming back and I say, hey, you know, I could relate to your story. I think for you to understand where, you know, women and children in your community are, you really need to do that. So every time when a child looks at me and says, you know, I want to speak with you, and says, don't tell anyone, but this is what has been happening. If I am all high-heeled, if I'm all not as human as they would like me to be, then I will not be able to tap into those stories. No child will come to you and say, you know, this is what my uncle has been doing to me. Can you help? Or don't tell anyone, you know? And then you would be able to come with other suggestions to say, what if we do it this way?
I just hate to think what would happen if you weren't here. It just speaks to what you've set up here. But before we began recording, Carol, you were telling us about some other much more encouraging stories. Won't you tell some of those?
There are two stories. One of them is Owami Mazwai. So when they come back from school, they all come running, you know, to tell me stories, you know, of what happened. But this young girl came and ran, you know, and said, Gogo, you know, said, the teacher called me by name today. You know, when I'm at home, people call me Nana, Nonoza, but this woman called my name. I began to realize how identity is actually important in the life of anyone. I should know who I am. And then I said, no, you know, Ohami, the teacher is actually calling you into your future. One day you're going to get out of this poverty. And then one day she comes to me with a letter from the school that she has been accepted to be part of the Tomorrow Trust. And I said, can you imagine if you were not called by your name? But I have this young girl, you know, she's from Mozambique, you know, her name is Teresa. So Teresa is almost like an activist. I love her. So she would introduce me to other girls who come from foreign countries.
How old is Teresa? Yeah.
Teresa is 6. So when she came, she was not so good, you know, in English or any of the languages. So other girls taught her. And she's actually imparting that to other girls who come in, who are new, especially from foreign countries. And she'll say to me, Gogo, I tell them it's safe here. We eat, we study. And she'll say to me, so-and-so is coming. And I'll say, Teresa, bring them on. But 6 months down the line, when they start speaking, hi, sawubona, Gogo, dumelang, you know, and then they start going to school, you know, and I'll say to you, Teresa, do you know how many girls you're saving, you know? She'll say, Gogo, speak to so-and-so. I think she's having problems. And we had a girl studying to become an actuarist, you know, at the University of the Free State. So when she went to the Moshal scholarship, you know, I said to her, we should apply. And then she got 5 distinctions, you know. When she had to go to university, she could not afford money just to take her from that informal settlement to her destination for her education. Most of the moms, they don't have phones. So we use a vuvuzela to call a meeting. So I asked the indunas to say, I think we need to do something here. So the indunas agreed. We did a vuvuzela. The women came and men. And I said, guys, this is our pride. She studied. She has a scholarship. Now she does not have money to get out of here into her purpose. And I just saw people collecting, some with 10 rands. Some say, is this all I have? We had about 543 rands that was collected. But when she left for her university, we just decided that each and every woman has to wear her traditional clothing. And we all sang. We sang her into her future. And when she left, you know, she just said to some of the girls, said, if I can make it, so can you.
That is such a beautiful story.
So they come into that little space, you know, and they study all night. And Loko got 16 stations. And I said to her, Loko, what happened? She says, Gogo, do you know when Helen said, if I can make it, so can you? It stood with me that I can't let that woman down. And now he's studying to become a lawyer. So it has become our tradition to celebrate them. So it is just those stories, you know, that make other kids to say, we can, you know, like, regardless of the teenage pregnancies that we have. We had a 13-year-old one day, we were doing an activity, and one of the caregivers says to me, check on Makananelo's tummy. I called her and said, Makananelo, are you pregnant? Oh, Coco, no, I'm not pregnant. No, Coco. And I said, can I do a test on you? Her results came positive. And I said, you know, what happened? And I realized that a 26-year-old slept with her because she could not stand in the queue for wood. And this young man said, no, go back home. I'll bring the wood. But little did Makananelo know that she's selling her soul. So she went back to school. But her child sometimes comes, you know, when she goes to school, and she would leave the child and go and play with other kids.
How old is Makananelo?
She's 14 now. Yeah, beyond that, you know, we still have those girls who'd find themselves in those dire situations where a girl child does not have mealie meal, you know, and a boy says, no, mealie meal, that's cheap. I'll get it. So that's why the support groups are important, you know, to instill in them that you can go and seek help. So we have a movement where we actually, whenever the other women are done with their work, we go and pick up wood from the industrial site to make it easy for the girls, you know, when they come back to school, so that they don't have to queue.
Coming up next, Carol tells us about the increasing numbers of migrants coming into Soweto and the problems they face, particularly the children. And she tells us more about her own personal history and struggles. And of course, we asked her to give us some tips.
Carol, you were telling us earlier that you're seeing more and more migrants, both internal migrants from, you know, the Eastern Cape and other parts of South Africa, and from outside South Africa's borders too, and that some of the people coming in are very afraid. They don't go to a clinic, they don't enroll their children. Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'll give you an example. I had to speak to a big foundation called Nurses with Purpose. So Nurses with Purpose would come in and do pop-up clinics, you know, where people come in because they are scared. They're scared of taking their kids to school. They are scared of allowing their children to come into any center. So you would need to sensitize them and truly make them understand that you understand what they are here for. And especially the women, you know, who get discriminated against by other women. So we have, you know, a forum that we run as well for women across South Africa, and we just get them together to say, you know, we have the same struggles as women, you know. But the other thing is sometimes you need to look at it beyond your foreign nationality and say, this is what South African women are actually going through as well. You know, we tell them to talk about it because the men would actually take advantage of them because they know that they don't have any support base. You know, so we come in as that support base to say, you don't have to allow abuse. You know, you got abused by being here, you know, from your country. You find us not being a country that's stabilized So the only way that you and ourselves can actually be able to survive is that we speak about issues. The other thing that we have done is we have our own safe shacks, safe houses.
Safe havens.
Yeah, safe shacks there, because when a foreign national gets abused, they can't go and report their case. So we have those shacks where the Indunas know about it, where we keep them there during that time. And my heart just goes out to them. The other day, we went to the Holocaust and Genocide Center, and we had one woman from Rwanda, you know, who lived through that genocide. And this Jewish woman, I'm sure she's in her 90s, both women said, never again, never, never again shall this happen. But we are just having that in our doorsteps. Never again should we be in the status that we are, you know, as a country or maybe as the world. We have to then relate the stories, these stories, to these women, to the degree where I'm just trying to organize somebody who can give us money, that I take them to the Holocaust Center, you know, so that they have an understanding, you know, that this has been a continuous thing and we can only protect each other.
So this seems a good point to ask you about your own struggles, you know, starting from 1976.
And in particular, Carol, how you came to be doing this work.
So, you know, I grew up in apartheid, but I think I'm going to say this with such sensitivity. Apartheid was bad, you know. And you look at what is happening right now, and sometimes I want to say, maybe the apartheid regime was right in the systems that they had in place to make sure that we are regulated, you know. I don't know if you understand.
I do understand.
Because at the moment, it's almost like we have become a lawless country. And I'm just coming from that point to say, maybe we were so captured, we were so urklapped, I don't know, in Afrikaans, that when freedom came, we did not know how to contain ourselves so that we are able to continue being a clean country, you know.
I do understand you saying that the horrific brutality and cruelty and the atrocities of apartheid nonetheless maintained some law, and that now we are in a lawless country.
Yes.
And that is hard to...
Yeah, that's hard to bear, you know, like it's very hard for me to bear. Maybe let me start from there to say, when I was a student in 1976, we marched through the streets of Soweto, and we did it with such pride. When we marched, I don't think any one of us thought things would go wrong, you know, as they did. But I think what speaks to me is how women like Winnie Mandela would come and talk with us and teach us freedom songs and say, when you march on that day, you know, this is what you'd be representing. You know, she told us about David Webster, told us about other people who have been in the struggle before. So when we marched, we were ready, you know, and telling us passionately so about Nelson Mandela and about other things, to say, your march is beyond the use of Africans as a medium of expression. So look at it in a bigger picture. And as a 16-year-old girl, maybe it was very difficult for us to understand what she was talking about. And she actually said, you know, like, as you march, one of you might fall, but continue marching. Hey, Winnie, what is she talking about? And yet she was speaking wisdom into us to say, these things might happen. That day still stands with me. It still speaks to me about brutality.
You lost a family member.
Yes, I lost my brother, who actually died in Maputo. We lost so many lives. Either you become very angry, or it actually molds your character into something else. So when my mother started making me to work in hotels after the whole thing around 1976, when I came back, I couldn't be friends with whites. So I was working in a hotel. The manager says to me, Mr. So-and-so says he lost his watch. I said, oh, okay. And I was cleaning that room. And I looked for his number. In the morning at 5, I went to his room. And when he opened up. I said, you know, like, angry as a young person. And I said, I stole your what? Do you know what you stole from me? You know, do you really know what you stole from me? I went on and on. And this guy looked at me because he was a visitor from overseas. You know, like, he just came to me and hugged me. So I couldn't care about the watch anymore. I actually began to realize that it's not all about color, but it's all about people, all about where people come from. But again, in the work that I'm doing right now is that I'm actually just amazed at how I can relate to white people. And my mother always asked me, aren't you getting mad when you see them? I said, no.
And Carol, may I ask, and it's my turn to speak delicately, I mean, rooted as you are so deeply in the non-racial struggle and imbued with the heroism and the suffering of that struggle, is it not hard now, as the person you are and the activist you are, do you not feel betrayed by the government, by the people in power?
I do. And that's why my statement to say sometimes I just wonder if we were not better off in the apartheid regime, regardless of its brutalities and cruelty. I get angry. You know, you could actually do much better. How did we as a country get here? And I look at the mushrooming of informal settlements to say, where is government, you know, when things go so horribly wrong? Seeing the young people who actually go into drugs, you know, seeing what is happening at schools. I don't even know how teachers cope in class anymore. But on the other hand is the corruption that is actually going on. And you want to say, this country is not poor. The millions and millions and millions of money that's being misspent, it actually makes me so mad. In the community where I work, when you are dishing up for children and then you do soups and a child comes in, an 8-year-old child comes in and takes 4 packs, I'm just taking this for my parents. And how can we as a country stoop so low? And I don't think this is an idol that Nelson Mandela died for. You know, when he was asked, what is it that you cherish? He says, I cherish an idol of a free and democratic South Africa where all persons living as one.
Carol, where do you find the strength, you personally, given what you're saying about the disillusionment we're talking about and the suffering around and the lack of help from government? Where do you find the strength to do the work that you're doing, to carry on in the face of all this despair?
I think someone has to stand up to this. There's a saying by Martin Luther King. I think the worst sin is for the right man to stand and look and do nothing. I think you get pulled by that, you know, to say these 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 2-year-olds know nothing. You need to start being a voice of those people that cannot be able to speak for themselves. I want to see how Teresa is going to grow up when she becomes a woman of my age. I'm sure she'll say, there was an old woman who was here, and this is what she taught me. I'm not saying I'm a Winnie Mandela or something like that, but somehow her energy of saying things ought to get right, which means if 2 or 3 of the girls that I'm raising can become me, not me per se, but me in the sense that they can say, this cannot be allowed. You know, we can't continue having people who go to bed hungry. We cannot continue having children who are not going to school because a child does not have a paper. I don't know how foreign nationals came here. But now that a 6-year-old is here, what do we do?
And inside you, Carol, do you ever feel overwhelmed by the extent and the depth of the despair and the need?
Yeah, sometimes I do. Sometimes I just feel like it's not worth the while. It's getting worse by day. I'm sure women that went before us felt the same. And I am not only talking about women of my color, Helen Joseph, Fatima Mir, Lillian Ngoyi. They did it so that we can take an example from them. Somebody actually has to pave the way for the next generation of women who are coming to say, it wasn't easy, but we have to.
So today we do have podcasts, we have WhatsApp, and people are going to be listening to you and they're going to be inspired by you.
Thank you.
Can you give them any tips? If they want to take up the baton the way you have, what should they do? Little Teresas, you know, who are walking in your wake. What can they do to change things?
I think reading about our past helps us a lot. And having a better understanding of women who went before us. I think I would say to them, read your history, not the Black history only, but the history of this country, you know, on how women fought, so that you can get tips from there. So we need to have a generation of people who are learning, who are changing, you know, who become change makers. You know, I read things and I change every day. And I go back to that community and said, hey, do you know what I read today? You know, do you know today I read about how we can prevent fire? I would not have gotten it if I was not a student of books, you know. So we need to start doing that, learning, empowering other people. So I look at my phone and I say, my God, this information, everybody should be knowing, and we should be changing our communities. And this is what has to happen, even if we do it one child at a time.
So listeners obviously want to help. They're all thinking about how they could do that. So what particular areas do you need support in? Donations for sure, but any other items? I'm going to say it. I know that you need IT equipment.
We need IT equipment in an informal settlement that has weak electricity, but we can survive with that. We need books, you know, for our children. We need sanitary towels, you know, toiletries so that they don't go and sleep with the men who work at the industrial site just opposite to us. We need clothing. But again, we need people that can impart knowledge, you know. There's this AI, and our children don't know anything about it, you know. You must see them when we open up videos. They just like get thumped into it because that's a new world to them. So we cannot leave them behind. So we need people that can come in and to show them that there is a life, you know, outside of the informal settlement, and that life actually is dependent on knowledge, on them being knowledgeable.
And where can listeners find you, Carol? Are you on social media at all?
I'm scared of social media.
Yeah,
you know, people say it's scary things.
So how can people find you?
Okay. My cell number is 072-521-7230. Our website is www.uzimasa.org.
Thank you so much for coming today. We know that you've only touched the very tip of the iceberg in who you are and what you do. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Carol.
Oh, Babette, Carol is one of the interviewees that has most touched my heart. I am so moved by the person she is, by the human she is, and by the work she's doing, going into those situations of such extreme need and abuse and violence and want, and finding a way to offer hope, to make things better.
And probably what I find most extraordinary and have been seeing in our interviews, that it's often the inspiration of one person, the commitment of that one person to change whatever's happening in their community, and how they inspire others to follow them.
Oh, if there's anybody who has funding resources listening, you know what to do. This is such a valuable organization.
And you know what she needs.
As always, thank you for listening to This Way Up. We would love it if you would rate and review this episode wherever you get your podcasts, because it'll help people to find Carol and to find all the people that we're talking to. You can also find us on our website, which is www.thiswayuppodcast.org. Get in touch if you'd like to. We respond to all emails.